I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Chad King. He is the VP at Aoka Systems. I probably pronounced that wrong, but we'll get it straight. Chad is also a whiskey enthusiast, a barbecue enthusiast. And let me just pause there. I got a text about a week ago from Chad saying, "Hey, I'm in your neighborhood." And he was eating at one of the top barbecues in Texas. But he's also a software developer who's focused on solving tough problems. He helps companies scale through better automation and integration. Chad brings a rare blend of strategic vision and hands-on execution. And one of the things I love most is Chad is a former Marine. Semper Fi, Chad. Welcome.
Yep. Thanks for having me, man. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and you know, I've had a lot of folks from Success Champions Networking coming on the podcast, and I just feel like I'm going to plug SCN, and I'm just going to say I get pitched to come on this podcast all the time, multiple times a day. And if you want to come on, get on the podcast, come in the SCN. Let me get to know you there, because that's probably the easiest path there. And for those that don't know what it is, what is Success Champions Networking?
It is the best way to network that I have found. The culture is so protected. The idea of give first is so ingrained and so, I hate to say enforced, but it's just the new way to network. And look, I've built multiple businesses on kind of traditional networking, right? And SCN, look, I'm an evangelist as well, Craig. And you know, I don't get anything out of it other than improving my network when good people come in and join. But I will spread the gospel on SCN because it is the best networking culture that I've ever encountered.
Yeah. No, I love it. And there's great people there. I mean, I had a virtual coffee this morning with somebody that was a little bit in the bozo territory, but those are rare.
It is.
Those are rare. They're there just like anywhere else.
They're there,
else.
But you know what? They probably won't last.
Yeah. 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 We went a whole call without him asking me what type of introductions.
Oh,
like, okay.
Huh. They must not have taken how to network without being a jackass yet.
No, I don't think so. And it's funny. We had a VC a while back, and the very first thing in my notes was he did all the talking and didn't ask me anything about my business. And he had reached out wanting to have, I probably spoke in his chapter, and that was probably the catalyst that reignited the VC. But yeah, anyway, but let's talk a little bit about the barbecue. So when you were here, what places did you hit?
So while I was down in Austin, we did Friday night. We went to Leroy and Lewis,
which is a, just for those listening, that's a Michelin star barbecue restaurant.
And I had, it's not traditional barbecue because it was tri-tip, but it was one of the best bites of food I've ever had at a barbecue place. It was incredible. Like, I wish I could make tri-tip like that. I've tried and I've not gotten close. Wow. So the Friday night was the Roy and Lewis. Then Friday morning, before the sun came up, I was in line at Snow's.
Yeah.
And this trip was me and five buddies, by the way.
Hmm?
The trip was me and five buddies.
Oh, wow. Is Snow's still number one? I forgot where they ranked in the last.
No, I'm not. They may be top 10. I'd have to go back and look. I don't remember where they landed on this last list, but they're definitely still on the list. But they've been number one twice, I think. They've been number three.
Yeah. I haven't been to Snow's. I need to get over to Snow's.
So, but let me tell you what stole the show for us, right? Because so Sunday on the way home, we hit Hellberg just outside of Waco. Another top 50 place. Incredible. It was fantastic. And so that was Masters weekend, right? And so they had a pimento cheese and brisket grilled cheese. Oof. Oh, but let me tell you what the highlight of my weekend was. My favorite bite of food the whole weekend came from Briskets in Austin, which have you heard of this?
I haven't.
Okay. So it's down on Menchaca, I think. It's in a little in the Radio Food Court. There's a little coffee shop there and a couple little trailers. So it's Briscuits, like brisket and biscuits combined, right?
Okay.
And they open at 8 o'clock, and I had a biscuit, which on its own is one of the best biscuits I've ever had, with brisket and smoked strawberry jam.
Oh my goodness.
It was incredible. And the brisket would have stood alone as probably a top 10 slice of brisket I've ever had.
Wow.
And you put it all together, and like in the menu, it was so hard to choose. Like I finally, like I was like kind of waffling, and I saw that, and I'm like, that's it. I'm just pulling the trigger. I'll be here all day. Right. If I keep looking at this menu. So that I locked in on that one and just went for it. My dad got the brisket, biscuits, and gravy, which was phenomenal. So yeah, man, briskets in Austin, it's a top 50 joint. So I got a stamp in the passport, the whole nine yards. But it was really cool. Oh, and by the way, I'm gonna put this out there for your listeners. Anybody that's thinking about going, it's okay if it's raining. There is some covered seating. And it was raining that morning, and we couldn't tell. I couldn't find anywhere any information online about whether that was going to be a problem for us or not. But we decided to roll the dice and go for it, and it is not a problem. You can go to Briskets in the rain.
Wow. And did you say that's down Manchac?
I think so. Yeah, they've got a good website. It's all on there. It's in
I'll check it
one of
out.
those little food one of the little food trucks.
Yeah, there used to be a place down Manchac, and I've forgotten the name of it, but they were like insanely good, and then they went brick and mortar and screwed the pooch.
Oh, Valentina's.
Yes.
It
Yep.
used that used to be the best breakfast taco on the planet, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then they went brick and mortar, which was a mistake. And then they got greedy and started cutting some corners. And it's a tale as old as time. And now they're gone.
Wow. What I'm interested in your take on this. I have my own theory on, when I first moved to Texas 22 years ago, I went out and I moved from North Carolina where barbecue, you'd get a whole barbecue plate for like $7, but it was pulled pork, usually vinegar based. And I come in, I'm like, wow, barbecue is expensive here. But the brisket just blew me away. And my first real barbecue, well, I think first place was Green Mesquite on Barton Springs Road, which was okay. Yeah, there's a reason you don't probably remember it. And then second was Cooper's out in Llano.
Okay.
And that blew me away. Cooper's absolutely blew me away. And it used to be my favorite, but at one point things changed. And I feel like barbecue took a significant leap forward in the last 10 to 15 years.
100% yes.
Okay, what do you think caused that?
Well, it was catching on, but I really have to kind of credit one guy, and his name is Daniel Vaughn. And he's now the barbecue editor for Texas Monthly, which never existed. When I met Daniel, he had put out a book, and it's called The Prophets of Smoked Meat. And on X and all the socials, whatever, he's barbecue snob.
Yeah.
And he's the guy that got out there and started talking. And I honestly credit him for my barbecue journey, because I used to think, my local place, I thought I knew what brisket was. And I heard Daniel on the radio one morning, and he kept talking about Pecan Lodge in Dallas, which they're not what they once were, but back in the day, whew, it was incredible. I mean, it was better than the old school places in Lockhart or whatever, which used to be ground zero for Texas barbecue, right? And I'm like, he kept talking about this. I'm like, okay, I got it. And I remember the first bite of brisket I had that changed my life. And it literally changed my life, right? Like, I mean, I go on barbecue road trips now, because the first time I had that bite that went, oh, this is what brisket can be,
Yeah.
right? And I've had that experience with beer and whatever, right? But where it's like, whoa, it just changed my opinion of something, And it's like, wow, okay, no, this is worth chasing to me. Like that next special bite is worth chasing to me. And it's social, I do it with friends and stuff. I do road trips with my wife. But yeah, I think it was kind of happening it's on its own, but I think Daniel Vaughn really, really was a catalyst for it taking off like it did.
Yeah. Well, and for me, it's if you're going to a decent barbecue joint, you're standing in line.
100%.
And I was telling my wife, when she woke up that morning that you went to Snow's, I told her, that you were over there, and she's like, "Holy cow, that's early." And you got there probably what, 6:30 in the morning?
About 5:30.
5:30, and you were 51st in line.
Yep.
But what I've found, I've waited in line over, I think the favorite line I've waited on is at Barb's
Okay.
BQ in Lockhart.
Yeah.
And it's just fun because the people that are there are people like you. They're real passionate about it, and they're neat people. And I'm somewhat local. Most of the people that are over at Barb's, they're like, they traveled like you from DFW or somewhere else to get
Dude,
in
the
line
people
there.
behind us at Snow's that morning were from here, from Germany.
Wow.
Yeah. We've been in line with people neck from Connecticut before. In fact, this is one of my favorite stories. I got to tell you this. We're in line at Snow's. I think it was 2 times ago when we were there. And, that morning we happened to get there about 5. So we'd been there for a little bit. It's closing in on like 5:30. And we had met this guy from Connecticut and we were having, great conversation. It was all good. And he goes, and I had broken out some whiskey and was sipping. And he goes, what are you drinking there? I'm like, that's whiskey. He goes, no, I see what? Stag Junior? And he goes, holy shit. I thought I was a badass for drinking Shinerbock at 5:30 in the morning, and you're drinking Stag Junior. It was just fun. I'm not trying to be macho or anything, but it was just real, it was super funny.
Well, hey, we should probably talk about salt. I mean, we can do barbecue all
I
day.
could do this forever, yeah.
But we should probably talk software.
I think
And
so.
yeah. So, all right, and get me straight on the Ioka. Am I saying that right?
Yep, Ioka Systems.
Okay. And what's that? I know Ioka has meaning, but I forgot what it means.
Yeah, so it's actually the founder's wife's middle name, but it's an African word, and Ioka means one who brings joy to all.
I love that.
We try.
I love that. Oh my goodness. Because so much, so frequently, software does not bring joy.
It, man, it does not. And people t today, people are stuck. They're held prisoner by the two old ways of buying software, and that is you buy off the shelf. Maybe you take the philosophy of best in breeds. You've got five different things that are all trying to do something specialized, right? And so now you're paying for all these, and you're using maybe 10% of each of them. But guess what? You don't get to pay 10%. You're paying for all of it, right? You're paying for the portions you're not using, and there's still something you need that it doesn't do, or you have the resources to build custom, which is great, but it can take forever and cost a fortune. And nothing against it, right? We spent 20 years building full custom software, right? And so the beauty is a business gets exactly what they need. But most of the time, you're living with something, and what happens is it's not joyful. Your people find it to be an absolute beating, right? It's not a tool that's helping them do their job. It's something they have to use. It's not making them more effective. It's a hassle, right? And it is far from bringing joy. And so we literally try to do that. We do our best to build systems that are actually a tool that makes someone do their job better, makes it easier for them to do their job, and everybody wins.
I used to work for a semiconductor company in North Carolina that was a little late to adopt SAP.
Okay.
And the CEO, who came from Tyco, said, "The good news is it only cost us $1 million to implement SAP. The bad news is it only cost us $1 million to implement SAP." That, he was saying our systems were too crude.
Yep.
But that's just insane. I go and buy the software. And the real expense is getting it to work.
You got to look at the cost, right? You got to look at that. You got to look at total cost, and that involves the price of the software, right? But then what else? Like, what other vendors are you having to hire? How much pain is it for you and your people? How's the time? And SAP literally can be a 3-year implementation before somebody gets it right. And again, you're paying for a bunch of stuff that you don't use, and there's probably stuff you still need that you don't have. And so, there's some new technology available, and we're obviously leveraging AI. But now we can deliver a highly customized platform that's 95% of custom for somebody. They're getting exactly what they need for their business. It's a real tool for their employees, and we can do it in a fraction of the time and pretty much at off-the-shelf prices. So you're getting custom software. You get the best of both worlds. You no longer have to decide between, between the two old ways.
Well, I use and I'm not going to say the name in the episode because what I'm going to say afterwards, but I use one of the larger marketing platforms, CRM
Okay.
marketing platforms.
I can guess.
And for years they've been really, really good. In the last few years, they've gotten a little chiseled about things. The
Okay.
software's gotten a little buggy. And I started saying a couple of years ago, it's like there's going to be another competitor. They're not going to hold their lofty position. 5 years from now, I think they're going to have serious competition on their case, just because of the way they were treating their
Okay.
customers and the ecosystem. And then in the last couple months, I realized, oh, their competitors is now these autonomous agents that I was looking at. Start thinking about marketing automations. Oh,
Yeah.
you want me to go in and program this complex workflow to do all these things and think about all the use cases, all the places where it would break? I was like, I just need a CRM and an AI agent that I say, hey, here's the automations that we want to run for somebody that
Yeah.
meets these criteria. And that's, I think it's a massive, massive threat to these companies. The agents
Oh,
are still too
absolutely.
immature right now. But this world's changing fast.
Fast. Fast. Like people like to ask me how AI is changing my business, and I have to say I don't know. I mean, I can tell you how it has changed it so far, but it's happening so fast, I'm not sure what it's going to look like in a year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and we've seen it. I mean, a lot of the SaaS companies got rocked in stock price because people are starting to speculate, hey, these agents. Instead of buying this expensive marketing platform, whether it's Pardot or HubSpot or whatever, you just need a basic CRM with an API. And if somebody doesn't make one, an agent can kind of whip something together for you.
Which, by the way, I gotta throw this out there. If you called me and said, "Hey, I need a CRM," we would have a very long conversation about why none of the 1,000 on the market would work for you, because we don't build what exists, right? I would want to know, like, if something is off the market that would suit you off the shelf, you should go do that, right? If it's truly suited, I need to know, where there's not a fit, and then we'll talk about that, and maybe it does make sense to build something. We've certainly built a number of CRMs. But we always have that conversation first, because I need to know what's unique to you and how are your needs not being met.
And when I've talked to you guys before, my impression, steer me in if I have this right or wrong. You guys have, people have bought these off-the-shelf systems, and it's like France and Germany. They don't like each other and they don't talk to each other. And you guys figure out how to make them talk.
A lot of times, yeah. So we might replace both of them and give you the one system that you really needed with nothing that has to talk to each other, right? We put one pane of glass, one dashboard where you can see how your business is performing. Because everything we do is all about improving financial performance, right? We're looking at operations, like what's falling through the cracks. Like, so yeah, you've got two software systems and they're both good at different things and they're not talking to each other. So you're entering a ton of data and things are still falling through the cracks. Right. These are the people we help when they know that, and these are good businesses, by the way, Craig. We're not working with people that are in trouble. We're working with good businesses that are, they're making money, but they also know that they're leaving some on the table or things are still falling through the cracks because they don't have the technology tools to support how they actually need their workflow to be. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If we're building something for you, but you've got two systems that are doing some certain things for you really well, we won't replace that. We'll integrate with it usually. Like there are people out there that don't play nice no matter what. But, like Epic is, if you're not a 500-pound gorilla, good luck working with Epic, right? The healthcare, EMR. But most things, if you have something that's working well, we're not going to replace that. We will probably do a data interchange so that now you're using the functionality, but you're not having to log into it. Right, you're logging into our system, you're interacting with the same system all day. We've given you exactly what you need, but we have that other system that's still kind of performing its function without you having to actually ever go interact with it.
Well, I'm interested in your take on it. I mean, if I was the CEO of a SaaS company right now, I would be pulling my team offsite for 3, 4, 5 days saying, where are we going? What are we going to do to stay relevant?
Totally agree. I totally, yeah. This may sound weird for a software company, but we believe that most people have too much software. And most of that is SaaS, right? You could almost view what we do as SaaS because of the financial model, but it's custom. We're using modules we have, building, custom writing the pieces that we don't to give somebody exactly what they need. It is an affordable monthly payment, so it is that ongoing cost, which if you look at it from, one perspective, that's good because now it is an OpEx instead of a CapEx, right? The accountants seem to dig that. But yeah, it does become an ongoing, but guess what? If you have software, there's an ongoing payment anyway, because it always needs upgrades. You got hosting costs, maintenance, security, things like that. We handle all that under one affordable monthly payment. So in a way you could look at that as SaaS, but it's not, because you're not in that box that you get with SaaS, right? And let's look at Salesforce. They'll tell you all day long that you can customize it to do whatever you want. And that's true, but that is also expensive. And then it becomes fragile because now when Salesforce updates their base platform, it affects all your customizations. You got to go deal with that again. So yeah, that's one of those, one of the old two ways that you've been stuck with. And we've got the best of both worlds. You can get enterprise class solutions even for a smaller mid-sized business.
So if you were, is Marc Benioff, is he still the CEO
I
of
think so.
yeah, so if you're Marc and you're sitting there, you're looking on this mountain of spaghetti code that you've just spent, what, 20, 25 years building, maybe 30. When did they start?
Yeah, probably closer to the 25. Maybe it might have been more like the mid-90s. Yeah, maybe it is 30. I'd have to check that. I'm not sure. Yeah, but at least 25.
So if you're sitting on this mountain of spaghetti code, what are you doing?
Counting on corporate America being a battleship that is slow to move and writing that out. And look, he's a smart guy, very obviously, right? I'm sure they're looking at what's next. But yeah, I think it's going to be very disruptive.
Well, I think that's the problem when you're dealing with the Salesforce or a SAP, is you have all this tech debt.
Oh.
The and for those that don't know, what's tech debt? How would you define tech debt?
So here's a good example of it, right? You built a two-bedroom house and you added on here and there and made changes because what you ultimately needed was an apartment complex. And so you grew your two-bedroom house into either a mansion or an apartment complex. And it is nowhere near the way you would have built it had you designed it to be what it became from the beginning and built it that way from the ground up, right? You've made decisions and you end up with things that you really at some point need to just go back and rebuild, right? Just to scrap it and start over would be the best solution. But you've added on here and there as needs came along and things changed. And so, yeah, you ended up with this behemoth that you would have never built it that way from the beginning.
Well, and you still, and you have to support legacy
Oh, yeah.
applications. I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
I saw a news article just in the last week that the next version of OS X will be the first version that doesn't support the Intel processors.
Oh, really? Oh,
Yeah,
I
they've
didn't
been
see
away
that.
from Intel processors for years.
Yeah. But I didn't realize they were going to stop support. Wild. Okay. Yeah. There you go. And who knows? Who knows what they had to do? There was some little thing buried in there that probably still needed that. Right? It didn't make sense in 100 ways, but there was something that probably still required it.
And that's the problem that I see for folks like Salesforce or SAP, is they have that tech debt, and it's like at some point they have to rip up everything
Yeah.
and put their legacy clients.
And well, and but Craig, not even just the tech debt. But functionally for your business, what are you living with that's not the right fit? How are you bending your business to fit that tool, right? When you really your process would be better off if you were really running your business the way it should and you had optimal workflows, it would be different than what you're stuck with because of those software tools that have you in that box.
No, and that's absolutely right. I mean, the marketing platform that I use, there are things that where I'm building my workflow around its capabilities rather than building my workflow around what I need. Well, here, let me give an example. So we were talking about this. I've started using OpenClaw. And for those listening, this thing is still very young. It's not well behaved. I fell for the trap where I'm watching these YouTube videos and I told you it was like, Oh yeah, I made an autonomous agent and told, surprised me in the morning. Woke up one morning, it baked me a cake, and I have yet to have that experience.
Yeah.
Instead, I woke up this morning and I got a stream of JSON data, and which I've told it like five times, never show me JSON data again unless I ask for it,
Right.
and just decide to dump that into the stream. And but the platform I use, my podcast where I host this blog, is based on that platform. And I was like, I used to go in when an episode went live, I would go in and it had a little tool where it integrated AI into the platform and would write the social media post to help promote the episode. Well, that went away and I put in a bug report and they're like, oh no, it's behaving just like it should. I'm like, well, wait a minute, no, it's not. And then they went and researched it. Oh yeah, we took away that feature because we're going to now start charging for that.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, well, you just accelerated the rate, which I'm becoming less dependent on you. And so now I have my agent monitoring when I have a podcast episode going live. I have a sub agent named Joker, Private Joker.
Nice.
So Hartman's monitoring when the episode goes live, tells Joker, hey, Joker, I need you to write me a social media post. And Joker is a specially trained agent on copywriting. And but he screwed that up. He forgot to do the post this morning for me, and so I had to
Damn.
bug him. And then it gave me a load of crap. I'm like, same thing as it's weird. Today's really weird behavior. It was a post for some other podcast. I'm not sure which one, but the I was like, that's wrong. But anyway, we'll get this worked out. And so the way they got chiseley about, hey, we're going to start charging you these AI credits to do the social media post. I'm like, well, I already have an agent that's a copywriter. And I'm just going to have them monitor when episodes
Yeah.
go live, write the social media post.
Absolutely. Hey, also, I don't know if you realize this, you just highlighted one of the other problems with the AI right now. It's being heavily subsidized, right? And
Yes.
so we're all getting highly dependent on it. But, if you're paying, I want to say it was OpenAI, maybe it was Anthropic, one of them recently let out that their clients that are paying $200 a month, they're spending about 5K.
Yeah.
Okay. That math don't work for long. And so they're getting us all hooked. And if you're relying too heavily on it, like a lot of the stuff we do, we leverage AI where it makes sense, but we are using good old-fashioned code, right? And doing things deterministically where we can and leveraging with AI where it makes sense, because we're going to end up upside down, or our clients are, right? If we build things that are too heavily dependent on AI, suddenly when they start charging what they should, it may not be sustainable.
Yeah. No, and that's a really, really good point. The other thing is, I would say that anybody that's been listening and saying, hey, AI can write my code, I don't need to hire someone. My brother-in-law is a very senior developer that works at the kernel level. And he's done a lot of work for government, for the government. I think he was writing viruses. So he's working at that level. But he told me recently, he said, I don't think I'll ever write another line of code. My job is to supervise the agent. And it takes his specialty to do it. But not only that, he told me the other day we were chatting, his agent went off and deleted a month's worth of work.
Glad to hear it's not just us.
Yeah. So he didn't have guardrails up. And so I guess where I'm going with that is, my fear is a lot of businesses will see this and they'll say, well, I don't need a senior software developer. Everything I'm saying is, oh, no, yes, you do.
Yes, you do. Man, look, we leverage it. Like, and I don't ever want to come across as anti-AI, because I'm not. It's changing business, right? It's changing the world faster than the internet did. But be careful with it. Like, leverage it. Use it as a tool, right? Like, honestly, we treat it kind of like a junior developer.
Yeah.
Now, also, we sometimes treat it like a consultant, to be fair, right? But we don't put too much trust in it, because it still makes mistakes, man.
Yeah. Well, and for me, I had to dig deep, and not that I've ever been a developer, but I had to, I've hung around with developers, and I realized when I started getting errors, I'm like, hey, let's make a production pipeline. And anytime you push new code, why don't we do a smoke test to see if anything broke? I had to tell it to do that.
Yeah.
And so that's an example of where if somebody's thinking about using AI, absolutely. But if it's involving code, there's a lot of know-how that I don't have, and your average business owner doesn't have about how code should be developed and how the agents need to be supervised.
It's you know what it is? It can be a pretty good way to prove a concept, right? If you
Yeah.
can spend a weekend or a month or whatever and build something to kind of prove how you want something to work, the problem is it's usually fragile, right? If you don't understand data structure and best coding practices, if you build something that way, it is probably not going to be scalable. It's probably going to be pretty fragile. And if you're relying on that to run your business, you could end up in a bad spot pretty quickly.
Yeah. For those that don't want to be in a bad spot, how did they call you? How did they?
Man, I'm pretty easy to find. I am a bourbon and barbecue on Instagram. Nah, just kidding. That's I mean I am, but I'm on LinkedIn. But man, the easiest way to get to me is go to rentmysoftware.com.
Okay.
And there's actually an assessment on there. There's a self-assessment. You can go on there, and if you see yourself in, more than two or three of these questions, we should probably have a conversation because I might be able to help. But yeah, go to rentmysoftware.com, take that self-assessment, or just schedule a call. But all our contact info is on there. That's the easiest way to find me.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, Chad, hey, I really appreciate, always enjoy chatting with you, and this was
Always.
a great place to do it. I do hope folks will reach out to you because it clearly, my experimenting with AI, it takes a pretty savvy pre-senior software developer to oversee the work that it does.
Well, the AI aside, man, if you have unpredictable profits or you're seeing eroding margins, that's we can almost always help with that. And by the way, we tell people if you're not going to get a multiple of 4 or 5x what you're spending with us, we shouldn't do it in the first place, right? So we should have a conversation, man. If you see things slipping, if you have inconsistent quoting, inconsistent processes, we might be able to help with that.
Yeah. Well, reach out, talk to Chad.
Love it. Thanks, man. It's been a
It's been
blast.
awesome. This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.